Robert Sullivan may have set a new record for the longest subtitle of a book. His new book is called Cross Country, 15 years and 90,000 miles on the roads and interstates of America with Lewis and Clark, a lot of bad motels, a moving van, Emily Post, Jack Kerouac, my wife, my mother-in-law, two kids, and enough coffee to kill an elephant. Sullivan's approach to driving cross-country involves having a few places you want to check out, but not so many that it will take forever to get from one coast to the other.
We'll go out and have some goals. For instance, I tried to see Jack Kerouac's manuscript for On the Road a few summers ago. That manuscript is a scroll, a kind of couple hundred foot long scroll of his typing, and that manuscript itself happened to be On the Road, something that very much excited me, the idea that On the Road was on the road. And I thought, while we were on the road, we should see this, and of course our children would grow up to be better human beings if they could see this. And, you know, I probably shouldn't bore you with the fact that turned out it wasn't where we thought it was going to be. It wasn't in Colorado. The exhibit was canceled at the last minute. And I probably also shouldn't mention that as a consolation prize, we managed to find a gas station that Jack Kerouac had taken a nap in front of. That gas station itself having been moved from where the Beat Poet in Boulder, Colorado thought it was originally, the gas station itself being put up on wheels, and that gas station on the road in Longmont, Colorado, just outside of Boulder, and brought down to a kind of a vacant housing development.
This trip that most of the book is about, this trip from Portland east to New York, right? I mean, a lot of diversions along the way when you think about the other 29 and a half times you've done this. But
yes.
But the focus was getting from Portland to New York this time, right?
Yes, and it's 29 or 30, or we're not really sure exactly how many trips we've taken, but it's whatever that is, plus one more this time. Although, actually, I think this time we're kind of circumnavigating the country accidentally. We got a little lost in Texas. But yeah, it's going east, and that's really important for me if I was going to write a whole entire book about crossing the country, because the country has always been crossed to the west, or our sort of formative ideas of ourselves as a nation, as a country, were all about trying to get west. So I think that the way I want to think about the country these days is about going east.
Westward Ho, Young Man, and Lewis and Clark, and everything, running the reel backwards in a way.
Yeah, well, and this year I'm typically excited, I guess, to point out this year is the anniversary of the return of Lewis and Clark. Now, Lewis and Clark, when they went out, you know, don't get me wrong, incredibly difficult journey. I mean, the trip was physically impossible. It was like a space expedition, except we have better maps for the moon when we went to the moon. They had bad maps, but it was a kind of military expedition. Jefferson's idea that if we crossed the country, if we described it, it would be ours. And he actually, it was sort of a book-inspired expedition in that Jefferson got summer reading from a bookstore in New York every summer. He sent it out to Monticello, and so Jefferson's sitting there, and he gets this new book from a British explorer, actually ghostwritten for a British explorer. I wish Lewis had known that. It would have saved him a lot of trouble styling his accounts. But anyway, it described the British trip to the Northwest Territories, and Jefferson panicked. Oh, my God, they're going to get out there before we do. So he sent his guy out, Lewis, who wanted to take Clark, and, you know, they made it. It's amazing that they made it. As you know, they nearly died going out. But coming back is interesting to me, because when they came back in 1806, everybody pretty much assumed they were dead. Lewis realized that the things he set out to do, or the idea of the country that he was crossing, turned out to be really different. I mean, he thought, you know, he spoke like Columbus going into it, you know, this virgin land, this uncivilized place. Meanwhile, when he passed through the Mandan villages in the Dakotas, the population of these settlements was larger than St. Louis, where he was coming from, larger than Pittsburgh, where he got a lot of his equipment, larger than Washington, D.C. And he saw trading routes from Europe in the middle of the country. He saw trading goods, and he saw goods from Asia when he got out to the Northwest coast. It was so not what he thought. And when he was coming back, you know, that even at the end, they would sort of, you know, climb up into a hill and say, we are the first people to stand here. And then they'd meet two trappers from Illinois, Pennsylvania. I mean, it was like, it's so I think I made some crack about, you know, it'd be like pulling up to another, up alongside another spaceship on the voyage. But this idea that, and I think Lewis was, you know, people talk about him being really depressed when he came back, and he didn't write for a long time. And I can see that. I mean, he was accidentally shot in the rear end by one of his men. That could depress you if you had to come back into town lying down with your, you know, back in the air. But he also realized that it wasn't what everybody thought, and that there was more here than they thought, and it was more complicated. Everything's more complicated. And the idea of going west is a simple stroke, and we get the stuff and we'll go, but coming back is always more complicated.
Well, I was thinking about that a little bit as you were talking, because you did make this voyage that others have made before you, but you found things along the way. You found stuff you didn't know. You discovered Lewis and Clark in a way that you hadn't understood them before. You discovered the highway system in a way that even for someone who has made all these trips cross-country didn't really know. The interstate highway system has a story all its own in a way. Who is it? Carl Fisher? Who started this whole idea?
Yes, Carl Fisher from Indianapolis, a bicycle store owner. And driving in America comes out of biking, of bicycling. People getting on these contraptions and riding out into the country, but then wanting better roads to do it on. And then those contraptions having engines put on them, or horse carriages too had engines put on them. But Fisher, like many people, went from selling bicycles to selling cars. And cars, of course, were kind of a fun thing to have. And you'd kind of go out into the country, or if you were Carl Fisher and you were used to racing bicycles, now you suddenly wanted to race cars. And he actually built the track that is the Indianapolis racetrack. Then he realized that we can't really get across the country. We should build a road across the country. There were, you know, small roads that you could connect and kind of make it across with, but he wanted a national road. And he actually got one built, the Lincoln Highway. It was built with private funding, and they'd come into a town and build what they called an ideal section. I love that phrase. They'd build an ideal section, and farmers would come up and kind of hit it with their knives and see how it felt, and maybe ride a horse across it or a cart. And if they approved, which they generally did, they would then put in some money for the road to be extended to the next segment. And this is how we built our first road across the country, although it's argued that it maybe wasn't finished. But
still, yeah. A great story. It's the way you sort of wish that a road would grow.
You know, Edsel Ford was a big helper in this. He was trying to build, he contributed money to build parks alongside of it for camping, and I think he helped with the landscaping, and I think his father was not that excited about this idea.
Robert Sullivan is the author of Cross Country, 15 Years and 90,000 Miles on the Roads and Interstates of America with Lewis and Clark, A Lot of Bad Motels, A Moving Van, Emily Post, Jack Kerouac, My Wife, My Mother-in-Law, Two Kids, and Enough Coffee to Kill an Elephant. Whew. There's one particular cross-country trip that Robert Sullivan describes as the worst cross-country trip ever.
I was in the moving van with all our worldly goods packed into the back of the moving van, 25-foot-long Ryder truck, and the Ryder truck's dashboard started being very upset in the Rocky Mountains, and then kind of gave up just outside of Minneapolis, where I pulled off into what looked like a gas station, got back on the highway for about a half a block, and then just completely broke down, and we had to move all the stuff from the one rental truck into the new one, but it wasn't new, and it kind of broke down a little bit later, but that's another story. But anyway, I had the car, our station wagon, tagged onto the back on a trailer. The car only fell off once while I was driving on that trip, and I won't get into that either. But I will say that it's kind of exciting when you're looking in your side view mirror and you see a car pulling up alongside and you think, huh, that car looks familiar. But thank goodness for safety chains. The truck broke down in East St. Paul, in a lot sometime after midnight. The soundtrack of Barking Dogs. All our stuff was taken out of one moving van and put into another by, and I'm using quotation marks in the air when I do this with my fingers, movers who put it into the other truck. The stuff didn't fit into the other truck, but in the end, I'm happy because I'd been thinking a lot about Jack Kerouac, and as you know, the Beat Poets spent a lot of time reading Zen stuff, Buddhism, and I felt like this was a moment of complete unattachment to worldly goods. Then when I actually was stopping in the town I grew up in New Jersey, the town where I learned to drive, the town where I should have all the roads in my mental head, and kind of did, and that was the problem. When I got to that town, I was driving this truck, which is, you know, whatever, 12 feet high, and then I was in the truck, and I thought, yeah, you know what, I'll go the quick way. That would have been great if I was house painting in high school and had your average size car, but the quick way had a low bridge. So the good thing is, I remembered seconds before the low bridge, but I kind of skidded the 24 and a half foot long rental truck to a halt. The car did not come off the trailer on the back, but when I backed it up and all these guys from a repair shop came out to try to help me back it up, they eventually came out with ball peen hammers. But anyway, made it back to our about to be neighborhood in Brooklyn where I parked the car away from the truck. And the car was hit by a truck. I know that because someone kindly left a note on the windshield and it said, "Your car was hit by a truck. I saw it." And that's all it said. That's pretty much all it said.
Robert Sullivan with the story of the worst cross-country trip ever.